Season's greetings. I'm Jeff Horwich, and this is In the Loop. I'm not going to lie to you. I'm not going to dress it up. This is just a stupid week for news. We kept waiting for something interesting to happen. But the end of the week rolls around, and people are still like, hey, remember when that guy threw that shoe? That was awesome. It's all last week's news. Blagojevich, Madoff, even Bush's auto bailout announcement today feels like just putting us out of our misery. Here in Minnesota, at least, we can watch this.
We thought this is the one that had been withdrawn earlier.
So we need to physically get this ballot at some point today, and we need to note this in our little stack of things to be dealt with. And
This is what passes for excitement these days. They're going through the rejected ballots, which will lead to a court fight, which will lead to Jesse Ventura appointing himself to the Senate. On top of it all, I've got a cold, which I'm sure you can hear. We had our story slam on Wednesday night, which was very fun. It pretty much wiped me out. So today, I'm afraid I'm more Peter Overby than Robert Siegel. I promise you I won't sing. Much. Given this turkey of a week, we're not even going to pretend to start with the news. Instead, let's talk about what all the kids are talking about right now. Toys. Why not? Sounds like fun. Here to talk toy trends with us, we've got kind of the dean of toy commentators, Richard Gottlieb. He's got his own toy consulting business and writes a blog called Out of the Toy Box. Richard, very glad to have you with us.
It's so nice to be with you today.
So I'll ask you the standard Today Show question here, I guess. What's big this year?
Well, there's a product called Bakugan from Spin Master. And it's kind of a Pokemon meets the 21st century.
Is that a character, like an action figure kind of a thing? Or?
It's, if you recall with Pokemon, the characters would develop and change, and there would be different little weird animals. You've got a lot of fantasy to it. In addition to that, Jax has a couple really neat products. One's the cupcake maker, which is selling very well. I guess everybody wants to make cupcakes this year. And they got a product I think is really neat called Eyeclops. That is, believe it or not, a toy version of night vision goggles that work up to 50 feet.
Wow.
Yeah, that's what I said.
I guess you can pretend you're, I don't know, on the ground in Afghanistan or something.
Oh, God, I hope not.
Whatever that's good for. How much does the economic situation affect what toys parents buy for their kids, how many toys they buy for their kids at Christmas?
It's really kind of interesting. Board game sales are way up. That always seems to happen during an economic downturn. Rather than, say, going to the movies with the family, you can go out and buy a game and play it every Saturday night for about the same cost of a ticket and some soda and popcorn. Play-Doh is selling very well. Nerf is selling very well. And again, these are reasonably priced products. People know it's good value. There are products out there, you know, they're called Watch Me toys. And you play with them once or twice and you laugh and that's it. And they're looking for toys, however, this year where they're going to engage them for a long time.
I was walking through Target the other day, and a mother passed me. She had two young kids in her cart, and they had some sort of, like, screaming Elmo-related thing. They kept punching the buttons on it, and it kept making the same noises over and over. What was that?
That is yet the new iteration of Elmo. I think this is iteration number 3. It's popular, but I don't think it's doing the numbers it had done in past years.
Is that a good investment in play, or is that more in the Watch Me category?
I consider it a Watch Me toy. You know, it's like the singing bass. Remember that thing?
Sure.
It was funny.
For 5 minutes?
Right. You know, but that's about it.
You had a blog post the other day about the trend of kids selling their old toys. Tell me more about that.
Parents are, and I think these are some great parents out there, are sitting down with their kids, and they're just telling them, honestly, the money's not there. And they're turning it into a learning experience, and the kids are going into their toy boxes and selling their toys to raise money to get the toy they want.
Like on Craigslist or what?
On Craigslist and eBay. And so the kids are learning resale value.
Sure.
They're getting a greater appreciation for the toys they get. And you know, I've often thought how, you know, you'll hear people say, oh, my kid has a million toys. Well, so now they're turning some of that in-home inventory into cash that they can use to buy new toys.
And on the flip side, that's a cheaper place to shop for toys.
It is. And I think it's probably a place that some parents can go who maybe are strapped.
And more sustainable, I guess. We're not throwing those toys in the trash.
Yeah, absolutely.
President Bush this morning announced this big bailout now for the auto industry, which is in the dumps. I have to ask you, how are sales of toy cars doing?
Toy car sales have been off for over a year now. A real interesting phenomenon because, you know, as an industry, we were actually up 5% in October.
The toy industry in general.
Yeah, and we've been up the whole year. So, you know, there's two types of folks that buy these cars. One are children, but then there's a huge collector community, which has, by the way, been negatively impacted by the economy. So that may be causing that sector to suffer a little bit, too. But I think that if your favorite car company is not doing well, maybe you don't collect those cars, or maybe it takes a little bloom off the rose.
Richard, it's been great to talk with you. Thank you very much.
I've enjoyed it greatly. Thanks for having me on.
You can find Richard Gottlieb's blog. It's called Out of the Toy Box at playthings.com. I'm Jeff Horwich. This is In the Loop. I mentioned our story slam near the top of the show. The theme was festive indigestion. The stories Wednesday night were amazing. We're going to have the one-hour version on the radio Sunday night at 6, or you can get it online. So many good stories. I think we're likely to put out a second batch for podcast listeners. We're at minnesotapublicradio.org/in-the-loop. Some good action on our blog this past week. People speculating about even cooler ways the Iraqi shoe toss could have gone down. Sandin posted on a study giving scientific proof that people who watch romantic comedies have more trouble with real-life relationships. Our Puppy Cam song from last week kind of went viral, which is cool. This week, boy, that Bernie Madoff guy sure had our attention. $30 billion Ponzi scheme or whatever it was. This guy seems to have messed up a lot of people's holidays, and the SEC was asleep with a switch. I was watching Christmas specials on TV last night, and I guess they're updating some of those old-timey classics, because at one point that dapper old Burl Ives snowman, you know, glided out on the snow with a special message. Madoff? Meet Rudolph.
Hucksters and frogs, hucksters and frauds, can't lose investment. Hey, what are the odds? Who would have guessed they were crooks? Just because no one could look at their books. Hucksters and frauds breaking in wads. How is it they kept it hid? You mean nobody knew this was bogus? Oops. Turns out we did.
That's just before they hop on the iceberg and wind up in the island of misfit investors. This is In the Loop. I'm Jeff Horwich. And you know who is camping out watching these Christmas specials? College students, home on break. Right now, seniors and lots of grad students are just one flimsy semester away from the worst job market in a long time. You have to imagine they're sitting on the couch wondering what the heck they're going to do. Younger students might still have a little time to shape their plans and studies around the changed economy, and you can bet many of them are paying close attention. To talk about some of this stuff, we called up Steve Rothberg, CEO of collegerecruiter.com. It's a website that tries to put employers together with new grads for that first job or internship. Steve, good to have you back on In the Loop.
Thank you very much, Jeff. Good to be with you.
It is challenging to speak across fields because, of course, they vary. But in general, the students that you work with, what is their state of mind as they're looking at trying to get a job right now?
One word, fear. It's a very savvy generation, not a generation that you can BS or lie to. They've got way too much access to way too much information. They know exactly where they stand, and it's not pretty.
Well, what are they supposed to do?
Well, one thing is that they can move to the greater D.C. area. The one area that is continuing to hire and increase the number of hires is federal government work. One of the areas that's been really hard hit has been accounting and finance.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the Internal Revenue Service likes to call itself the world's biggest accounting firm. So if you're an accounting major and you thought you were going to go to work for one of the big firms or a regional firm, and those firms are now not hiring or not hiring nearly enough to include you, well, maybe consider the Internal Revenue Service.
Students that, say, major in English or other liberal arts degrees like to say that they are preparing themselves broadly to be ready for whatever comes. Is that now true?
One of the common misconceptions is that if you graduate with a liberal arts degree, that you're not qualified to do anything other than maybe be an English professor. And it's absolutely not true. And in an employment market like today's, that's a really good thing. In growing economies, you need specialists. In recessionary times, you need generalists. So liberal arts grads are actually in a pretty good place right now, comparatively speaking.
After all those years of watching the, you know, finance and accounting majors go off to these big money jobs, and of course the IT years where if you studied computer science, you know, that was where the money was. Maybe now finally the liberal arts majors are getting their revenge?
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm glad that you mentioned the computer science and IT majors, because this is nothing new for that sector. You went from this situation in 1999 where there weren't nearly enough IT people to a situation a year later where there were way too many, and you're still seeing the impact of that in this college generation. You know, 8 years later, there still are not nearly enough college students graduating with computer science and IT-related majors. And, Jeff, that's what we're probably looking at 8 years from now with accounting and finance grads.
So there might be something to be said for betting against the market, maybe going into finance right now, because it'll be back and there won't be enough people to do it.
Yeah, you know, I don't think I would want to be going into finance right now because I don't see the market turning around that quickly. But for somebody who is, say, a high school senior, a class of 2009, and right now they're deciding on what college to go to, perhaps even what their major is going to be, yeah, absolutely. By the time they get out of college, finance and accounting is absolutely certain to be hot again.
Thinking about all this stuff, I had a hypothesis that I want to try out on you. Since the dollar signs aren't necessarily there right now, waiting for these graduates when they graduate, are you seeing more students choose to, I don't know, follow their hearts, maybe pursuing art, trying to get into the nonprofit world, do what they want to do?
This generation, they're really caught between a rock and a hard place because they need to make good money in order to pay back their student loans. This generation has student loans that are 4 or 5 times greater than what their parents graduated with. On the other hand, most of the jobs that are really appealing to them do not offer great pay.
Many students are home with their parents over this holiday break. Do you think they should be having some conversations about how they might cooperate with each other again after school?
Yeah, many students are at home over break, and they'll be home with their parents after graduation as well. One of the things that makes me very optimistic about this generation is that they do have very good relationships with their parents. You hear story after story after story about parents texting with their kids or emailing with their kids multiple times a day. It's like they're best friends. And that creeps some people out. But on the other hand, isn't it great that these 40, 50, 60-year-old parents who have been through recessions before have such a strong relationship with their 22-year-olds that they're going to be able to pass on that wisdom? Their kids are going to listen and they're going to learn from the mistakes and hardships that their parents had to endure.
Well, Steve, it's been very helpful to talk with you. Thank you so much.
My pleasure, Jeff. Have a good weekend.
Steve Rothberg is the CEO of CollegeRecruiter.com. Every few shows, we try to catch up with one of our listeners who's tracking a particular kind of news. Ruth Knapp catches the podcast out in San Francisco, and she's been tossing us interesting ideas from the world of architecture and design. This week is kind of a breath of fresh air from the news and the holidays. We thought it'd be kind of cool to have her join us. Ruth, thanks very much for talking within the loop.
No problem.
So you yourself are an architect, right?
Yes, I am.
And what kind of buildings do you work on?
Right now, I'm doing a fire station, and before that, I was doing a ski facility.
Wow, all kinds of stuff.
Yeah, all kinds of stuff.
So, item one from Ruth Knapp, the pencil is dead. Now, do you mean just in general? I mean, I have a pencil back on my desk.
No, it's more that new architects in school are being trained on the computer almost solely.
Now, doesn't the computer make things so much easier, so much more elegant? What do you lose when the pencil is not a part of the equation?
The pencil sketch has an artistic quality that quite often lets people fill in the gap in their own mind as to what the building could be.
The client, that is.
Yes, and it begins to sort of spark their own imaginations. A computer, while it can draw a very nice line, very clean, very straight, makes somebody feel like they don't have any chance to change the building once they've seen it like that.
Does that make you sad, nostalgic that the pencil is going away?
you know, each one has its pluses and minuses. I guess it's just the old days of seeing an architect in the movies and he's unrolling his drawings, starting to sketch on top of them. That's pretty much done.
Another item you mentioned to us, this huge project called the Chicago Spire is evidently on hold. It was supposed to be the tallest building in the country.
2,000-foot-high condo tower,
wow.
Right.
Wow.
It is a building by Santiago Calatrava, and what's interesting is that it looks like a drill bit.
Giant twisted pickle or something
or
like that.
Or Twizzler. Right?
The Twizzler building, very distinctive, love it or hate it, building. But what happened? Just a mess of financial disagreements and stuff, right?
Yes, the architectural team and I believe the engineering team have leaned the owner for the fact that they haven't been paid. They have halted the work on the site. It's just a big hole in the ground.
And we might surmise that this being condos and the real estate market being what it is, this is just a sign of the times?
Yes. There's a lot of projects across the architectural community that are going on hold, not nearly as spectacularly as this, but the clients are having second thoughts.
Fun fact about that non-existent building, the guy who invented the Beanie Baby bought the penthouse condo, right?
For $40 million.
Well, not even your Beanie Babies can cheer you up when you lose that kind of priceless opportunity.
Yes.
Finally, evidently there's kind of a rule of thumb, you told us, that buildings, other than houses, tend to have about a 50-year lifespan. They get knocked down after about 50 years and you build something new. But the buzz right now is that's breaking down?
Now that sustainability has come into standard practice, we're starting to see these older 50s buildings that previously might have been bulldozed, be preserved as if they're actually part of the historic fabric. And it's interesting because it's modernism as a style. There was a big post-war boom where a lot of modernist buildings were built, for better or for worse.
Well, right. It is not everybody's cup of tea.
These buildings
that were built in the 1950s.
Yes.
But because of sustainability, they're going to be with us for a while.
Yeah. Modernism is historic now.
Just in a nutshell, for somebody who might not recognize the term, how does someone know if they're looking at a modernist piece of architecture?
To me, modernist means clean and pared down. No trim, square shapes, skyscrapers. I mean, they're obvious.
Is it that our standards for what is historic now, because we want to try and be more green, more sustainable, have changed?
Yeah. I mean, an existing building is a bird in the hand in terms of embodied energy, embodied materials. If you're going to tear it down, you really need a reason to do it.
Do they strike you as historic when you look at them, even if you don't personally like them?
No. And that's the irony here. There are wonderful examples that have been lost to fashion. People didn't realize that they really had a wonderful building in their hands because they wanted to build the newer, bigger thing.
So these modernist buildings built, say, in the 50s, oftentimes were the result of knocking down something that today we might find quite a bit more charming.
Yes, indeed.
And given what they're made out of, they could be here for thousands of years, right?
Well, at least the asbestos, sure.
Well, Ruth, it's been fun to talk with you. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much. I enjoyed it.
Ruth Knapp is an architect with BSA Architects in San Francisco. Like so many good folks outside Minnesota, she listens to the podcast out there. We know you're probably dying to see a picture of the Twisted Pickle Drill Bit Twizzler building. You can see it on our website, minnesotapublicradio.org/intheloop. Our latest Story Slam will be on the air Sunday night. I know I've mentioned that, at 6 o'clock. And before we go, we've got a little preview for you. This is our first slam at the holidays, and people brought all kinds of festive and funny stuff. One of our favorites at the slams over this past year has been a guy named Dave Mondi. And Dave's stories usually involve the pursuit of some girl or the difficulty of trying to make it as a writer. Well, this time he changed up his game a little bit, and it was one of the best stories of the night.
The thing about Jesus that no one will tell you, he really wasn't a very good carpenter. All the other guys on the job site would only give Jesus the really easy stuff, like the stuff he couldn't screw up. Like, you never let Jesus work on anything structural or load-bearing. Being the Son of God, he just assumed he was good at everything, but he was human too, which meant that, like all of us, there are naturally some things he wasn't good at, like carpentry. And the worst part was he had to pretend with him because, you know, Jesus was really sensitive. I mean, he could be tough, definitely, like the real boxer, poet, revolutionary type, but there are definitely times where his eyes would get real big and wet and trembling, and you could just tell he was carrying so much weight. But it really sucked when he offered to fix something at your place. You'd have him over, you'd be hanging out, talking philosophy and theology. I mean, Jesus was pretty much the smartest guy I ever met, but then he'd get up to get a glass of wine, and he'd say, "You know, these cabinets, pretty old. Would you allow me the pleasure of making you some new ones?" And you'd have to pretend to be all excited, like, "Oh, thank you, Jesus." And the moment he was out of sight, you'd call a real carpenter, and you'd say, "Look, I want to keep this quiet, but Jesus was just here, and they'd cut you off right away and say, "Look, just don't use them. We'll be over immediately." I'll never forget Thomas waking up in the middle of the night to all his coffee cups crashing to the floor. The look on his face, it told the whole story, just full of doubt. Like he was thinking, "I just can't believe Jesus made such crappy cabinets." It's weird how big he got with the crowds and everything and the miracles. I mean, once he really got going, a lot of those more human things just kind of dropped right out of his personality. But those are the things that really make you miss him the most, you know? I'm sorry, I don't know why I'm getting all emotional now in this part. It's just, I guess I think about him a lot this time of year. I try to pretend it doesn't bother me, but they didn't have to, you know, do that to him. What they did. I know he was stirring up trouble, but at the very least, he was the kind of guy we needed more of, not less, you know? I don't know. See that paper towel holder over there? Jesus made that way back when. I mean, the thing works for crap as a paper towel holder, but the dowel's way too thick, for one, but I can't seem to throw it away. I don't know. I guess some people write books to remember him. Me, I've just got this crappy paper towel holder.
Dave Mondy. Just a taste of the hour-long In the Loop Story Slam. Listen for it Sunday night at 6. We'll also have the podcast out, and you can download the show starting sometime on Sunday. Thanks to everybody who came out to join us the other night at the Lab Theater. In the Loop is produced by Sandon Totten and me. We are edited by Kate Smith. Our theme and much of our other music is by The Smarts. You're hearing them right now. Learn more about them and more about us at minnesotapublicradio.org/intheloop. And find us on Facebook, where we actually use our page to get ideas and communicate about what we're working on. Got almost 300 fans at this point, and it is growing all the time. We'll be back next week with a special Christmas week show, some of our favorite holiday stuff from our, believe it or not, 3 years now on the air. I'm Jeff Horwich, and tonight I am actually going over to the Walker Arts Center, finally, to see the British Ad Awards, with the Smarts, as a matter of fact. Maybe I'll see you there.